Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, Dan Friedel has a report about Britain's new prime minister. Gregory Stockel presents this week's Education Report. Finally, we will hear the first episode of our history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, the Russian invasion of Ukraine 6 months ago led to worries that people worldwide would go hungry. Crops like wheat remained stuck in blockaded ports. With only so much farmland in the United States, farmers could not do much to meet the new demand. But that may be changing. Earlier this summer, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, USDA, started new policies to urge American farmers to grow two crops, one after another, on one piece of land. The practice is known as double cropping. The USDA changed insurance rules to lessen the risk of growing two crops. By doing this, the USDA hopes to greatly increase the amount of wheat that U.S. farmers can grow every year. That will reduce dependence on big wheat producers like Ukraine and Russia, and increase supplies. The idea has not received widespread attention. As autumn arrives, it is unclear how many farmers plan to try double cropping. But some farmers who already grow two crops say it is something others should consider. "I think it's a great idea," said Illinois farmer Jeff O'Connor. He has double cropped for years and recently appeared with U.S. President Joe Biden to support efforts to increase food production. In 2020, the U.S. exported wheat valued at $6.3 billion. The U.S., Russia, Australia, and Canada lead the world in wheat exports. In past years, Ukraine has usually come in fifth place. Ukraine is a leading supplier of wheat to people in Africa and the Middle East. After Russia's invasion, wheat prices nearly doubled to over $12 a bushel. Since then, prices have dropped, following agreements that have permitted the export of some Ukrainian wheat. Double cropping is not a new idea in the southern parts of the United States. The warmer temperatures there let farmers plant winter wheat that can be harvested in late spring, while adding a second crop of soybeans. The problem comes when cool weather delays the spring harvest of wheat, which in turn delays the planting of soybeans. With the new rules, the USDA could ease the risk of a costly planting backup. The agency would simplify crop insurance approvals for farmers planting a second crop in areas where double cropping is possible. It also would work with crop insurers and farm groups to support coverage in other areas. In announcing its effort, the USDA said it was aiming to stabilize food prices and feed Americans and the world amidst continuing challenges, such as the COVID-19 pandemic, supply chain disruptions, and the invasion of Ukraine by Russia. The USDA did not note climate change in its announcement, but the agency and other experts have long said warming temperatures will make farmers rethink what they grow and how. Mark Leyenbauer raises livestock and grows crops near Palmyra, Missouri. He said he has double-cropped for years. For him, it has been a good move financially. Still, he warns that farmers must learn how to plant one crop just as they need to harvest another. Leyenbauer added that many farmers may not be willing to take on the added risks or the extra work. There are a lot of extra steps in there, he said. It adds some complexity.
Britain's Prime Minister Liz Truss is promising new policies to deal with the country's economic problems. Here is what she had to say.
I will deliver a bold plan to cut taxes and grow our economy. I will deliver on the energy crisis, dealing with people's energy bills, but also dealing with the long-term issues we have on energy supply. And I will deliver on the National Health Service.
Truss replaced Boris Johnson as the head of the Conservative Party after winning the party's leadership vote. Johnson agreed to step down earlier this year. Truss officially took the position on Tuesday in a ceremony in Scotland with Queen Elizabeth II of England. Truss becomes Britain's third female prime minister after Margaret Thatcher and Theresa May. Truss became prime minister because her Conservative Party still holds the majority in Britain's parliament. As the party's new leader, she takes over as prime minister without a general election. In her comments, Truss discussed a big concern of Britons: rising food and energy prices. The cost of fuel has gone up sharply in Great Britain over the last 2 years for two main reasons. First, there has been higher demand for energy as businesses around the world started up again in 2021 after shutting down for much of 2020 for the COVID-19 pandemic. Then, prices rose again in early 2022 when Russia invaded Ukraine, which reduced the supply of gas and oil coming from Russia. Many nations decided to restrict their business with Russia when the war started. That drove prices up. Truss is Britain's fourth prime minister in 6 years. She said she will make a plan to deal with Britain's economic problems, but continue to support Ukraine in its war with Russia. She said one of her first phone calls in her new job will be with Ukrainian leader Volodymyr Zelensky. Truss is expected to use government money to help Britons who cannot pay their energy bills. The plan is expected to come out Thursday and cost taxpayers over $116 billion. One British citizen discussed the new prime minister with the Associated Press outside the Houses of Parliament in London. Rebecca McDougall is 55 and works in law enforcement. She called the rising cost of living in Great Britain really quite bad, and said Truss is making promises to help the normal working person. McDougall wondered if Truss will be able to deliver on her promises. The Conservative Party will likely be faced with calls for an early election from the opposition if Truss cannot ease some of the nation's economic concerns. Ed Davey is a leader of the Liberal Democrats, a small opposition party. Davey said people are really worried.
losing sleep over their energy bills. Truss, however, does not have to call an election until late in 2024. As Johnson left as the government leader this week, he said he plans to re-enter private life invisibly. However, political observers do not believe the man who was once London's mayor and the nation's prime minister will be able to fully disappear. I'm Dan Friedel.
More school systems are making an effort to deal with some of the problems teachers face, including taking care of their mental health. Many schools do not have enough teachers. Current problems facing teachers include behavioral problems and fears of shootings. Some school districts have provided increased mental health training for workers and support in the classroom. They have also provided resources aimed at identifying burned out teachers and getting them connected to help. Being burned out means a person has become very physically and emotionally tired after doing a difficult job for a long time. A recent opinion study by the Rand Corporation found that twice as many principals and teachers reported frequent job-related stress as other working adults. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, noted a similar study that came from a coalition of mental health organizations in New Orleans. It found educators working during the COVID-19 pandemic reported rates of emotional difficulties similar to those of healthcare workers. It found 36% showed signs of anxiety, 35% had depression, and 19% showed signs of post-traumatic stress disorder. Leigh McLean is the main investigator at the Teacher Emotions, Characteristics, and Health Lab at the University of Delaware School of Education. She said, "It's all pretty bad." She found levels of depression, anxiety, and emotional tiredness among elementary school teachers that are 100 to 400% higher than before the pandemic. She said those problems are increasing the most among less experienced teachers. She said she recognized similarities between teachers and the general population, with underrepresented groups being hit the hardest. Some districts have or are planning to spend federal COVID-19 aid money on teacher mental health. They hope it might improve the classroom environment, keep teachers on the job, and help students. Nebraska and Pennsylvania are among the states choosing teacher mental health as a top goal. A Delaware school district hired two social and emotional learning experts who deal with problems teachers are having in the classroom. And an elementary school in Indiana starts the week with Mindful Mondays, where teachers guide their classes in deep breathing. There are also Thoughtful Thursdays, where a student is called on to write a letter to someone working at the school to show that they are thankful. And on Friday Focus, students and teachers talk about self-care. A growing number of groups offer training to improve mental health. Methods include breathing exercises, yoga, gentle movements, and meditation. One program aimed at improving mental health is cultivating awareness and resilience in education, or CARE. researchers found improvements, including reductions in mental health problems, in studies of its use among 224 New York City teachers. The studies also found reductions in stress and improvements in quality classroom interactions. Researchers found it helps students show increased engagement. I'm Gregory Stockel.
For years, our American history series, The Making of a Nation, has been one of the most popular programs from VOA Learning English. The series started in 1969. Today, we start our series again from the beginning. Generations of schoolchildren have been taught that Christopher Columbus discovered the New World. In fact, the second Monday in October is celebrated as a national holiday to honor the European explorer. But October also has a lesser-known observance. October 9th is Leif Erikson Day. So who was Leif Erikson? Today, Steve Ember tells us about him and other early European explorers.
Leif Erikson was a Norse explorer who sailed around the northeastern coast of what we now call North America about 1,000 years ago. He and his crew returned to Greenland with news of a place he called Vinland. Following his explorations, a few settlements were built. Experts digging in eastern Canada in the 1960s found the remains of a village with houses like those in Greenland, Iceland, and Norway. But the Norse did not establish any permanent settlements in North America. Today, as we relaunch our series, we begin with the story of early European explorers in North America. In the 11th century, Europe was beginning a period of great change. One reason was the religious wars known as the Crusades. These were military campaigns by Christians to force Muslims out of the Holy Land in the Middle East. The Crusades began at the end of the 11th century. They continued for about 200 years. One effect of the presence of European armies in the Middle East was to increase trade. This trade was controlled by businessmen in Venice and other city-states in Italy. The businessmen earned large profits by supplying the warring armies and by bringing goods from the East into Europe. When the European crusaders returned home, they brought with them some new and useful products. These included spices, perfumes, silk cloth, and steel products. These goods became highly valued all over Europe. The increased trade with the East led to the creation and growth of towns along the supply roads. It also created a large number of rich European businessmen. The European nations were growing. They developed armies and governments. These had to be paid for with taxes collected from the people. By the 15th century, European countries were ready to explore new parts of the world. The first explorers were the Portuguese. By 1400, they wanted to control the eastern spice trade. European businessmen did not want to continue paying Venetian and Arab traders for their costly spices. They wanted to set up trade themselves. If they could sail to Asia directly for these products, the resulting trade would bring huge profits. The leader of Portugal's exploration efforts was Prince Henry, a son of King John I. He was interested in sea travel and exploration. He became known as Henry the Navigator. Prince Henry brought experts to his country and studied the sciences involved in exploration. He built an observatory to study the stars. Portuguese sea captains sailed their ships down the west coast of Africa, hoping to find a path to India and East Asia. They finally found the end of the African continent, the area called the Cape of Good Hope. It took the Portuguese only about 50 years to take control of the spice trade. They established trading colonies in Africa, the Persian Gulf, India, and China. Improvements in technology helped them succeed. One improvement was a new kind of ship. It could sail more easily through storms and winds. Other inventions, like the compass, allowed them to sail out of sight of land. The Portuguese also armed their ships with modern cannon. They used these weapons to battle Muslim and East Asian traders. The other European nations would not let Portugal control this spice trade for long, however. Spain's Queen Isabella and King Ferdinand agreed to provide ships, crew, and supplies for an exploration by an Italian named Christopher Columbus. Columbus thought the shortest way to reach the East was to sail west across the Atlantic Ocean. He was right, but he also was wrong. He believed the world was much smaller than it is. He did not imagine the existence of another continent and another huge ocean between Europe and East Asia. Columbus and a crew of 88 men left Spain on August 3, 1492, in three ships, the Niña, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria. By October 12th, the sailors stood on land again on an island that Columbus named San Salvador. He explored the island and the nearby islands of what are now known as Cuba and Hispaniola. He believed they were part of the coast of East Asia, which was then called the Indies. He called the people he found there Indians. Columbus left about 40 men on San Salvador Island to build a fort from the wood of one of the ships. He returned to Spain with birds, plants, gold, and people captured from the land he explored. Columbus was welcomed as a hero when he returned to Spain in March of 1493. Columbus sailed again across the Atlantic to the Caribbean 5 months later. He found that the fort built by his men had been destroyed by fire. Columbus did not find any of his men. But this time, he had many more men and all the animals and equipment needed to start a colony on Hispaniola. 7 months later, he sent five ships back to Spain. They carried Indians to be sold as slaves. Columbus himself also returned to Spain. Columbus made another trip in 1498. This time, he saw the coast of South America. But the settlers on Hispaniola were so unhappy with conditions in their new colony, they sent Columbus back to Spain as a prisoner. Spain's rulers pardoned him. In 1502, Columbus made his final voyage to what some by then were calling the New World. He stayed on the island of Jamaica until he returned home 2 years later. During all his trips, Columbus explored islands and waterways, searching for that passage to the Indies. He never found it, nor did he find spices or great amounts of gold. Yet he always believed that he had found the Indies. He refused to recognize that it really was a new world. Evidence of this was all around him. Strange plants unknown in either Europe or Asia, and a different people who did not understand any language spoken in the East. Columbus's voyages, however, opened up the New World. Others later explored all of North America. Now you may be wondering about the name of this new land. If Christopher Columbus led the explorations, then why is it called America? The answer lies with the name of another Italian explorer, Amerigo Vespucci. He visited the coast of South America in 1499. He wrote stories about his experiences that were widely read in Europe. In 1507, a German mapmaker, Martin Waldseemüller, read Vespucci's stories. He decided that the writer had discovered the New World and thought it should be called America in his honor. And so it was. Spanish explorers sought to find gold and power in the New World. They also wanted to spread Christianity, which they considered the only true religion. The first of these Spanish explorers was Juan Ponce de León. He landed in North America in 1513. He explored the eastern coast of what is now the state of Florida. He was searching for a special kind of water that Europeans believed existed. They believed that this water could make old people young again. Ponce de León never did find the Fountain of Youth. Also in 1513, Vasco Núñez de Balboa crossed the Isthmus of Panama and reached the Pacific Ocean. In 1519, Hernán Cortés landed an army in Mexico. His army destroyed the ancient empire of the Aztec Indians. That same year, Ferdinand Magellan began his 3-year voyage around the world. And in the 1530s, the forces of Francisco Pizarro destroyed the Inca Indian Empire in Peru. 10 years later, Francisco Vázquez de Coronado had marched as far north as what is now the American state of Kansas, and then west to the Grand Canyon. About the same time, Hernando de Soto reached the Mississippi River. 50 years after Columbus first landed at San Salvador, Spain claimed a huge area of America. The riches of these new lands made Spain the greatest power in Europe and the world.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.